Hello and welcome to the Art of Balance podcast, brought to you by Balanceology with me, Dylan Cox, and my wife and author of the best-selling book Burnout to Brilliance, Jane Morris. Jane is also a regular contributor to Psychology's magazine. Together we take a light-hearted approach whilst doing deep dives into topics that we believe can help improve your day-to-day lives. If you like what you hear, you can follow us on Instagram at balanceology.uk or alternatively visit our website balanceology.uk. Today's episode is all about regrets. We're going to be talking about the different types of regrets and the impact that they can have on you both positively and negatively. We hope you enjoy today's episode. Episode number 30 of the Art of Balance podcast with me and Jane, and today we're going to be talking about regret and regrets.
Wonderful. So where would you like to start?
Meeting you was a huge regret of
mine. I just knew you were going to say that.
Yeah,
I was
so obvious. So you queued it up. Too obvious, sorry. But true. No, so regrets, often we can look at regrets as a negative thing, I guess, but they're not always negative, and there are some positives to be had from having regrets. We all experience them. I'm sure you have regrets about certain things you've done in your life, Jane, or certain actions you've taken. I definitely do. And we thought we could just unpack that a little bit and talk about the impact that it has when you dwell on regrets and what kind of things you can do to use a regret in a positive way.
Yes. I think that word dwell is, for me, like the kind of distinguishing mark between something being a regret that holds us back and sort of drags us into the past. There's a weight to it, there's a heaviness, and we then ruminate and dwell on something versus almost more the lightness that can be taken when we look at mistakes as being an opportunity for growth and moving forward and changing things up, doing things differently so that we don't make the same mistakes again, so that we learn something from what we would otherwise hold as a regret. So to be honest, I don't like to kind of harbour regrets because I don't think it helps us particularly. But the reflection, when we recognise that we have held a regret, the reflection process can be definitely a very powerful one, because then we can shift the way we look at those regrets, the way we hold them in our very bodies.
It's definitely a pathway to growth, and in that sense you can use regret as a teacher and as a point to learn, I guess, is what you're kind of walking towards there. One of the things that when I was thinking about this and I was thinking about my own experience with regrets, is in more recent times I've tried to not hold any regrets, rightly or wrongly, because I feel like a decision I made in the past was based on how I felt in that particular circumstance at that age and stage of my life. And I have different views on things now, may have been a year ago or 10 years ago, that it's not fair for me to judge myself back then on the standards that I have now. And therefore, I kind of have created a mantra in my head in that I say to myself that was how I was feeling at the time, and I made the best decision based on what was available to me. And I may change that viewpoint in the future, but that's how I feel now about past regrets.
Which is really great, because I experience quite often in coaching sessions with clients where people can really be hampered by their regrets. And there's a song that often comes to mind when people use
Is it going to be like a mid-90s song that no one's heard of, Jane?
Of course it will be, because all of my favourite artists are from then. No, but when the words should've, would've, could've come up, those are always indicators to me that there's a regret there. And sometimes that can be become like a way of thinking for somebody, where they're looking at how they could have made something better and they kind of beat themselves up about that because of wishing that they'd done something differently. Even just small things like a restaurant that they'd chosen, or how they've maybe decided to lay out an event or something. Like when we do it with the small things and we beat ourselves up about them, and we keep going back and thinking, oh, if only I'd done this, or, you know, I can even feel the tension gathering in my shoulders as I kind of recall different people reflecting on that in themselves, or describing sort of certain ways that they've approached things, because it's it's really hampering, I feel. It creates a weight cumulatively, all these little niggles that we can hold, which if we otherwise let go of, then we've got so much more energy available. We're not weighed down by the dwelling, the ruminating.
Definitely. And I think there's something in there around positive self-talk, because we can be generally, I mean, everybody holds regrets, right? And you can fall into a trap of being negative to yourself and harsh on yourself and call, you know, I might say, oh, such an idiot for not making that decision, the right decision, such a fool, like, always happens to me. And that negative self-talk is never going to be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reframing that to look at it in a more positive light. And there's studies being shown that people who react to something like that in a positive way and have an attitude of, well, I'm going to learn from that and I'm not going to do it again, but I'm going to be kind to myself about what happened and look at those, you know, environmental factors at the time that led to me choosing that, making that decision rather than making a different choice. And that can only help you to, like you say, learn from that regret, but also not dwell on it and not let it control you and your attitude and your happiness, mm-hmm. and your health.
Yes, because it can completely consume some people. We've seen that, where people are completely paralysed, living in the past at what they wish they'd done differently. And life's too short. We've got to take the learnings and then move on.
Definitely. I was reading a really interesting article, and it quoted a study by an author called Daniel Pink, who'd done a survey, actually, the World Regret Survey. And he's, you know, gone out to thousands of people and found out about their feelings towards regret. And, you know, overwhelmingly, everybody experiences regret. That's something that we just do. And it's just the way we deal with it. But there were four types of regrets that he kind of picked out from that study and labelled them. And I thought it'd be interesting to share them and just get your thoughts on them. Because one of the most popular types of regrets were boldness regrets, which is basically where you're being overcautious or wary in a potentially life-changing situation and you don't make a choice that is perceived to be at the time by yourself risky and dangerous, but it doesn't actually perhaps carry as much peril as you first saw at the first thought at the time. So that was the form of a lot of people's regrets. It's like that wishing that I had gone up to someone and asked them out on a date, or I wish I'd done, you know, gone for that job that I knew I was perfect mm-hmm. for, but I didn't. And it's just really for you just to comment on that, Jane, but also maybe what can people do to get over that feeling of they were trying to escape embarrassment at the time, but now they're weighed down with this feeling of guilt and regret and this overwhelming thought of what if I'd have done it.
Well, and sometimes that overwhelming thought of what if can prevent you then from actually taking the bold move the next time, because the confidence can diminish from not having taken the bold action. So I think in that respect, where that resonates for anybody listening, it's to do some work on building back up your confidence. Okay, you didn't go for the job. Okay, you didn't ask out the guy that you liked or the girl that you liked, but you
did.
And I live to regret it. No, you didn't do it at that moment, but it doesn't mean that you can't build on the learnings and then make that, be that shade braver. It doesn't mean all of your opportunities and everything's now closed door. So it's, I think, especially when it comes to job opportunities, and this can be also as a result of maybe being turned down for a job that you did put yourself forward for and you thought you were going to get, but you didn't. And it kind of knocks your confidence a bit. And you maybe regret, I don't know, not having taken more time over the application or wearing the suit that you wore. Or you could pull it apart and sort of try and proportion things, sort of blame on yourself of things that you should have done to help you've succeeded in that instance. But the key is then not to let that prevent you from being that bit bolder moving forward.
And you don't want to, not consciously, but subconsciously, shut down potential opportunities in the future because you won't even see them because you're worried that you won't make the right decision. That's great. Another one of the four regrets was foundation regrets. And these revolve around a kind of failure to have been responsible in a situation. So you could think about something like you were neglecting your health, or you were playing truant at school, something I never did, and overspending, etc. So I guess largely basically bad habits that would have a long-term kind of negative effect on you. And those foundation regrets that perhaps you still carry now about things you've done in your past.
And those I do see sometimes people hold sort of almost like a shame of sorts in terms of not having done a certain thing at a certain age or stage. But for me, I guess in the same way that being a shade braver and kind of growing in confidence is something that there are lots of coaching tools and techniques that help people to overcome those regrets, fears, inhibitions. With the foundation type regrets, it's a similar thing. It's about letting go of the past, really, and essentially cutting cords to things. Coaching is something that we use in this respect as well, because often it's about a sense of identity when it comes to foundation regrets, because we think that if we, for example, work with plenty of people who haven't got a university degree, but they're extremely accomplished in whatever their career is, they're leading companies, they're, you know, doing things at a very high level, but they quite often, because of the way our society has been structured and because of the weight that's been put on the perception of how important having this degree certificate is, I don't believe it's important, but so many people do, right? And it's about ripping up that self-limiting belief that's been affecting their identity, that not having that bit of paper somehow hinders them, somehow means they're not worthy of the role they have, somehow means they're not as intelligent as the person next to them. So quite often it's about exploring, who are you? Okay, here are all the things that you wish you had and you don't, but getting comfortable with who you are regardless of those things, and then letting them go, no longer being attached to whatever that cord was that made you feel regretful at not having that thing in your life.
Brilliant. And another point, one of the third types of regret was moral regrets, where people have potentially hurt other people. So it could be cheating on a partner or lying to a friend in an ongoing situation, and how in the future those people then harbour these moral regrets around their behaviour and maybe not being able to justify why they did it because they know it was just wrong.
I think of all the different types that we've talked about so far, it's probably the heaviest one, because, and it's the reason why so many religions have been so successful, because they have proclaimed that through their religion they can relieve you of this moral regret that you have and somehow absolve you of your mistakes. But really, again, it comes to making peace with the past and recognizing you can't go back in time at the moment. We don't have time machines at the moment, to my knowledge, that we can use. So you can't go back and change things. You can go back and change things in terms of your energetic relationship with it, through processes, guided visualization processes that many practitioners like ourselves would use. But aside from that, you can't actually go and change history, right? So you can, but you can lessen how you hold that and carry that in yourself with some support. And I think when it comes to making peace with that, it's noticing, again, a bit like you said earlier, you were at that time equipped with whatever skills and thinking and whatever you had available to you, that in that moment, it must have seemed like your only option or the most logical next thing, and you made a mistake, but with hindsight's a wonderful thing, perhaps you could have done it differently, but at that moment you didn't. But carrying it again into your future is only going to weigh you down.
And I guess, again, you can pick apart your reasoning for why you did it, and maybe you didn't face up to that reasoning at the time because you weren't able to, or you were worried about what was going to happen if you did face the real reasons of doing something. So say you've made a moral decision at work, for example, and you know you've had to use a supplier that don't fit with your ethics or your values, and now you're looking back and thinking, why did I do that? Maybe you were under pressure, you weren't able to face up to that at the time, or you had a boss that you couldn't say no to, And again, there's that learning there, I guess, isn't there, where you can look at that and say, okay, next time, if there is a next time like that, I'm clear on my values and my ethics now, and I'm going to stand up for myself. And again, it goes back to confidence. It goes again back to practice and just being able to stand up for yourself a bit more. But if that's the standing up for yourself is one of the reasons that contributed to that, then at least now you can accept that and move on with it rather than this always hanging over you. Because you've got to be kind to yourself in that situation. You know, even if you've done something bad, you still have to accept, yes, I've done something bad, but what was the driver behind that? And it might not be a good thing. It may be a very bad thing. But
then you can resolve, like you said,
you need to resolve
never
it.
To make that same choice again.
Yeah, exactly.
And release yourself from needing to carry that literally to your grave.
Yeah.
Because that's where...
And also what people do is they put it onto other people.
Oh, gosh.
So it's the blame. Yeah, it's the constantly putting your regrets onto somebody else.
So that they can make it better for you.
Yeah, I think. And that's, you know, and if you're that person, if you're the secondhand regret person, that's a whole other episode.
Yes.
But yeah, that can happen. And I think if you can do that consciously and, you know, verbally telling somebody, but you can also do it in a more subtle way without you perhaps knowing the impact it's having on the other person. And if you think that could be happening to you, that's when you really need to hold the mirror up and think, hang on, this is my regret, not somebody else's.
Yeah, and I think that's worth speaking to, actually, because that can be a very emotionally abusive experience for the person who's on the receiving end of somebody else's blame, because that person holds such regrets about things they did or didn't do in their life. And quite often it happens where the parent wants the child to rectify the mistakes that they've made by making different choices to the ones that the parent did. And so that can be something that's quite exhausting, draining, and constrictive to grow up in.
Definitely. I mean, I saw it a lot in boxing when you went to an amateur boxing club and the dads had never boxed themselves, but they were forcing their sons into it. And we used to call them like world champion dads because they would tell you, you know, how to coach the son or daughter. And it wasn't because, you know, the child didn't really want to be there in a lot of cases. In some of the cases they did, but in some cases they didn't. The ones that didn't want to be there, it was just this kind of, they're doing it for their dad, but their dad was doing it because he wished he'd done it when he was a kid. And he didn't have to, you could replace the sport with whatever it is, football, tennis, whatever. And I think that, again, is that kind of their regret being pushed onto the child. And it's for that person to work it out. Not everyone's going to be able to see that themselves, but it's not fair on that child or not fair on the son or daughter of the person that they're doing it to. So, and it happens in adulthood as well. And it's not just exclusive to children.
It's quite closely linked, I think, as well to sort of the expectations that we place on, like, each generation that comes, the expectations that a parent may place on the child, not necessarily even fulfilling the thing that they regretted not doing, but fulfilling the thing that they'd hoped that they'd maybe made sacrifices in their own lives or something to set up a certain environment to enable or more easily enable the success of their child. And then the child is sort of forced into shoes that don't fit.
Well, the child's version of success. The child's version of success is going to be very different to what the parents' version of success is. And success to the child isn't really in their vocabulary. It's happiness is really what they're searching for when they're a kid. And then and then when they're older, they've already been funneled into what they believe success should be when they haven't been able to explore it for themselves, I guess. And that's difficult. The fourth area of regret that was mentioned in Daniel Pink's study was connection regrets. Now, I can see this a lot, and this is a very popular one as well from what I read, was people who've had lost relationships with family members or friends or colleagues, and they have drifted out of touch maybe with somebody that they care about, and they regret not having picked up the phone. Now, you may listen to me saying this and think, well, that's very easy to fix. You just pick up the phone, write a letter, or, you know, just get in touch with that person. It's a lot more complicated than that and layered than that. And then you've got embarrassment, shame, fear, worry, all of those things standing in front of you to get in touch with that person. Will they care? You know, do they like me anymore? And that regret is kind of stopping you from doing the most simple thing. So, I mean, I'm sure every listener here has experienced it in some small or larger form where you've drifted away from someone you actually really care about and you just haven't had the time or you haven't prioritised that relationship.
And sometimes we invent a kind of story, don't we, in relation to the other person and how they wouldn't want to hear from us, or they would hold all this disdain towards us because we haven't been in touch. But and I think sometimes that can get carried away with those sorts of thoughts. Again, it goes back to your self-talk and make the a mountain out of something that actually doesn't need to be such a large and scary and thing. You know, quite often when people do attempt to reconnect with those that they've drifted apart from, the other person has just been busy with life and they've not thought anything more about it, and you've even come into their mind and they've wished they'd make contact, and then another year goes by and actually, when out of the blue that letter comes or email or message or, you know, however you communicate nowadays, there's so many different ways that we can get in touch with each other, it's a lovely surprise. It's like and connections can be rekindled.
And I guess the worst thing that could happen is you make the effort to reach out and they don't respond. It's not really that different than you not having reached out.
You haven't really lost anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Then,
so
you?
Yeah, the best scenario is they come back.
Lose. And the only exception to that, I think, is when we've wished and we've regretted not being more in contact with somebody, and then that person has actually passed away. And then the things we perhaps wished we'd said or done, we can't change. However, this is something, again, that comes up in coaching sessions, and I often will encourage the person to still say to that person what they would have liked to have said, whether it's kind of out loud in a sort of an exercise, and they imagine that person's in the room with them and they relay everything they wish they'd said and done in that sense. Or, as you mentioned, with a letter, you can still write a letter to a loved one even when they're no longer with us. And then, or a poem, you know, poetry can be an amazing way of expressing it, or draw the person a picture, and then create some form of ritual for you sending that on to that person in your own way. So it might be that you go and you bury it where the person's buried, for example. Or one of my clients had a father who was particularly fond of the ocean and sailing, and so she made a little boat and put the letter in the boat and sent it off to him. You know, there's many things we can do that feel kind of most fitting for the person in this scenario, but ultimately it's freeing yourself from holding the weight of that regret.
Absolutely. And I think you touched on a few things there that make me think about how do we cope with regrets. And I guess one of the ways that you can, one of the best ways to cope with regrets, that's our dog, who's having quite the dream, I think. He's got no regrets. He makes the most out of every day.
Oh gosh, we can learn so much from animals.
He's living his best life. But yeah, the idea that when you have a regret, it's actually easier when you share that. Now, that could be through just talking to a friend and basically detaching yourself from your feeling towards that regret, and just being able to analyse what actually happened in the situation and looking at it in a more black and white way without the emotion attached to it can be very helpful. Now, some people may not be comfortable talking to a friend about something like that. They may be comfortable talking to a practitioner like a coach or a psychotherapist or a counsellor. However, they might not be comfortable talking to anyone about it at all. And the thing you mentioned there that I thought as well is really interesting is that you can write a letter, or, you know, at least write down an essay of what has happened, and then you'll get all of that off your chest. And sometimes, well, you know better than most, Jane, when you've written something down, you can, when it's in words in front of you, you can very quickly distinguish your feelings from the facts, and then you're able to work with the facts and come to a rational decision as to why you shouldn't hold on to that regret and how you can move on from it.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I think there's for some people it is about having the black and white, the logical kind of reframing of things. And then actually for other people, sometimes it is about making connection with the emotions.
Oh, absolutely.
Perhaps because those emotions...
Even though I didn't say it, that's what I mean, yeah.
But perhaps because those emotions were either too painful at the time for the person to feel, or they weren't permissible. So sometimes you know, something that can have happened in our life, depending on what age and stage we're at and our surroundings and those surrounding us, it's not been appropriate or deemed appropriate by others to express those emotions. You know, I've worked with other people where they felt this feeling of needing to hold themselves together when there's been a certain tragedy or whatever, and then they've not actually gone into the place that their body needed them to go to actually process and feel the sadness, the bereavement, the grief. And sometimes those feelings, they get trapped in our bodies, in our very fibres, and actually having an opportunity to voice those, to express them, whether that's, I use integrative art psychotherapy with the coaching, so quite often it's through some sort of artistic expression. You mentioned sort of, you know, with writing, so it can be through writing like a letter, or I mentioned poem, but it could be through something else. You might make something out of clay, you might paint a picture, you might actually put some music on and dance what you're feeling, or get some drums out and drum the pent up emotions. But
you don't want to hear my drumming.
What happens is it dislodges and frees up what's been waiting on us. And that, I think, in all of this, is what's really needed when that word regret comes in and we notice the shoulda, woulda, coulda. Like
Beverly Knight.
Oh, I was saving it for the end.
I was going to end on that.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda are the last words of a fool.
But that expression, that need for expression is very important and something that we do suppress, I guess. Last thing I want to talk about is we've kind of talked about there some sort of coping mechanisms for regrets, but what about just avoidance? How can you avoid falling into that trap of having regrets? And it's very easy, you know, there's loads of songs about that, like no regrets, and people are like, I live my life with no regrets, man.
But I think it's about being real. It is about actually not avoiding the feelings and the emotions. So noticing when you might be beginning to start harbouring something, and then naming it, going to that place, catching it, doing something with it, versus detaching from it, pretending it's not there, ignoring it, shutting it down. Because that's when stuff gets stuck in ourselves. And that's when we actually start to manifest a lot of illnesses and struggles in our lives. Like the external struggles.
Because those little things that you hold add up. Yeah. And then before you know it, you're juggling all of these things. Yeah. I like that. So you nip it in the bud as soon as it happens and you've dealt with it and you move on from it. You know, that's easier said than done, I guess. But you want to kind of root it out before it sort of starts kind of
with anything
sticking inside.
So being open and honest with yourself, it's that self-awareness that this is essentially sort of self-development podcast, isn't it? So
conversation, Jane,
self-development,
it's humor
related tools, techniques, approaches, methods, they are all building on you, helping you to build on your own self-awareness, your self-reflection, your ability to get to know yourself as deeply as possible, so that you start living and showing up without inhibitions, without fear of vulnerability, with being connected to the boldness, the bravery that comes from your inner power, and following the wisdom of your body. Because when our body will give us indications when things are starting to kind of come out of balance, not even just out of balance. Our body will give us indications all the time as to how lit up we are by something, whether we should be wary of someone or not. And when we actually choose to listen, then things keep moving. They don't get stuck. And I think
that's really what you need to.
Is that a lifelong learning, isn't it? To kind of keep putting one foot in front of the next and not moving forward rather than going back.
I'm going to tie this together with an example of one of my more recent regrets where I've learned from it, that sort of brought together body and mind, was during the lockdown, and I let you cut my hair. And that was a big regret, because you said you were going to give me a sort of fade, like 2 to 3 fade on the back, and you shaved off all my hair. So I learnt never, ever to let you cut my hair again, because I looked like a convict, didn't I?
Yeah.
For about 3 months. So yeah.
So on that note.
On that note, yeah. Don't let Jane cut your hair. Thanks again for listening though, Jane. I really enjoyed talking about that, because it is something that we actually talk about just in conversation quite a lot. And I think it's something that you need to think about a regret when it's happening rather than letting it fester. That's really stuck with me, because I think you do hold on to them and they do emotionally and physically weigh you down.
Yeah. No more regrets.
No more regrets. Have a great week.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode all about regrets. If you'd like to find out more about some of the tools and techniques that Jane and I were talking about, then do get in touch. Jane did mention a meditation process that can help, and that's called Future Life Progression, something that Jane practices in herself. So do get in touch if you'd like to find out more about how you can use that to overcome long-held beliefs and move you forward from a position of where you're dwelling on regrets. Our email is hello@balanceology.uk. If you'd like to find out more about us and what we do, head to our website, balanceology.uk. There you'll find a stack of resources that we have, from podcasts to videos, and also a list of our upcoming workshops and events. And finally, if you like this podcast and you want to hear more, it'd be great if you could click that subscribe button on whichever platform you download it from. If you could leave us a review or a simple comment, that would be brilliant to help us spread the word about the Art of Balance. Thanks very much, and we'll catch you next time on the Art of Balance podcast.